Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 35. We're on Week 2 of our fact-finding mission into the Delphi trial. This week, Bob broke down the ballistic testing, as well as some of the questions surrounding the audio and video elements of this case. Today, we are sans Janet, but we have a lot of questions. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
Just that there's going to be a little delay before Episode 3, because a lot of you guys have been asking me about the Lindsey Clancy trial that was going on. For those of you that don't know, it ended in a mistrial last Friday. I didn't know a whole lot about the case. I started reading into it a little bit. The more and more I was researching it last week and over the weekend, there's a whole lot of legal complexities to it that I think are worth addressing. And I kind of just judge what would be a good episode to put out for you guys based on what's happening in my real life. And in real life, everyone from my wife, my daughter, to my coworkers, to everyone keeps asking me questions about that case and that trial and what the verdicts mean and all that stuff. So I've already recorded, I had Bob Mata come on today, who spent 3 weeks in Massachusetts. I think it was in Massachusetts at the trial. And so Bob came on, who, as you guys know, I'm sure you're all very familiar with Bob. He's a podcaster and attorney, and it was at the trial. So I had him come on to talk about the case a little bit, but more than anything, to really break down, there was this whole idea of that the jury was deliberating over that she would be guilty, but not criminally responsible, which is, I learned today, was the same as like other states where they call it, you know, not guilty by reason of insanity due to postpartum psychosis. It was just super interesting. It was one of those things where when people were asking me about what things meant and what was going to happen next, I didn't know the answer to it. I wanted the answer to those questions, so I had Bob on. So we're going to jump over to that this weekend just so we can, while it's still in the news, talk about the Lindsey Clancy case on Sunday with Mata. And then next week, we'll be back for part 3 of the Delphi coverage, where we're going to get into Dr. Walla and the confessions.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It opened my eyes a lot, too, because most of what I knew about it was from what people were saying on social media. And with that, we've got a ton of listener questions. This one, we covered a lot of ground real quickly in this episode. And since this is, I know you weren't here last week, Zach, either, but also this week was real heavy into firearm stuff. So before we get into any listener questions, just want to go over if you have any thoughts that you want to bring up.
Let's see here. The ballistic stuff, all the firearms questions, I'm really happy we got to dive into that. And I'm really happy that I get to be here this week, because that's what I love. There is a lot of weirdness to this whole thing. You know, I know there's some listener questions, so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. But the idea of some of these firearms she tested or other firearms she did not test is really strange to me. And like you said, where did these other firearms come from? This Glock and the Smith & Wesson, where did these, they didn't just come out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Like there's a reason those particular firearms got tested and mm-hmm. maybe not others. And I think the one thing I'm going to ask this, I believe I know the answer, but I want to make sure that everybody's clear on the answer. When she is testing Richard Allen's firearm. It is his actual firearm.
Yes.
Right? And then when we are testing other firearms, such as Brad Weber's firearm, is that the same model or is it his actual gun?
His actual gun. And that's why I said in the episode, I think that the Glock and Smith & Wesson were other people's actual guns, like okay. other persons of interest.
Okay. See, and that's what I wasn't sure where that came from, whether it was just like, we're going to test this model and see if this model gives us something similar before we dive in further, or if it's the actual firearm from these individuals.
But yeah, for sure, the Brad Weber's gun, which at trial, and by the way, I realized when I listened back, I kept saying Brian Weber. It's Brad Weber. Unless now I mind fucked my own self and I don't even know which one's right.
But I'm pretty sure it's Brad Weber for sure.
Yeah.
But now
yeah,
I don't know Brad what Weber. You said in the episode.
I definitely said Brian over and over again because okay. when I was listening, I'm like, nope, that's wrong. Nope, that was wrong, Bob. But they didn't identify at trial that it was his gun. It was just because you know they didn't want to taint the jury with that. They're just like, here's a gun we tested.
Mm-hmm. So the one thing I think that I want to clarify, and not that it's not clarified, but I think we could help some listeners that aren't familiar with firearms. They talked about a few distinct tool marks, one of them being an extractor, one of them being the ejector, which I don't think many people understand that those are two different components, even though they're both very similar. The extractor is actually, it looks like a little hook, a little arm hook that wraps around the back of the shell. That's actually what pulls the shell out of the barrel when it's coming back.
Right. So you're talking about when you see somebody like slide the top of the gun back.
Yes.
It's the piece that's like a little spring-loaded hook that grabs the little lip on the bullet and pulls it out of the barrel.
Pulls it out. The actual ejector is just a little spring-loaded button that is off to the far side of it that as the shell comes back with the extractor, it just pushes forward and pops the shell out of the gun based on force. It's a really simple mechanism, but I don't think people realize that it's two different components. Because a lot of times when you hear extractor, ejector, you're thinking it's exactly the same thing. But the tool markings would line up in different locations on that shell casing.
It would look differently because they're doing two different things.
Exactly. One is going to actually, like I said, it's a little hooked arm that is going to hook around the lip of the shell. So the markings are going to be more on the lip of the shell. The actual ejector, it is more centralized. It's not exactly where the primer is. It's a little off to the side, but it's still more centralized. So the tool markings are going to be a little different. But also,
I didn't realize that. I've never actually known where the ejector was at. So it doesn't come from the side and push it. It's from the back.
It's from
it pushes
the back.
It forward.
It's on the face where the firing pin comes out. So there's a little hole and there's a pin that comes out when you pull the trigger. That's called the firing pin. Hits the primer, which ignites the primer, which fires the bullet down the barrel. Directly next to that, there's a little bitty button looking thing, and that's the ejector. It doesn't come out sideways. It comes out forward. But with the pressure from the extractor, the little hook, and that pushing forward is what makes it fly out sideways.
Right. And then the third mark they were talking about, I had a trouble understanding, I think is where the bullet fits into the barrel.
Yeah.
The way out is like the face. I think that's what she was talking about, how it fits into the barrel. So just so you guys know, if you do it manually, and this is why it was bothersome to me immediately when I found out she had to fire the rounds. So you have a gun, it's loaded, there's a bullet in the chamber, and you decide I'm going to eject this bullet. So you rack the gun. So you pull that slide back, and as you pull it back, that little extractor, you know, it's again, like Zach said, it's a little bitty, think of a little spring-loaded hook that's just hooking around the lip of that bullet. And as you slide it back, it pulls it back. When it gets all the way to the back of the movement, there's a little button in the back that pops out and pops that little bullet out of the side.
Right.
That's how it works when you do it manually. When you fire the gun, why they're semi-automatic, is when you fire the gun, the explosive force coming out the barrel is what pushes that slide back. So instead of your hand moving it back much slower usually and with less force, there's an explosion that explodes that slide back, but then the mechanism is exactly the same. There's still the extractor holding it, and that button is still back there to eject it. But instead of those things engaging because you're manually pulling that top back, the explosive force of the round going off is what sends it back.
Right.
And so you have a lot more force and you have heat, which softens the metal, softens the brass when it's happening. So it causes the marks to be much deeper. So good breakdown if you guys, hopefully that made sense between the two of us, so that when we go on to some of the stuff you heard in the episode we're going to talk about in these questions, some of that will make a little more sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I do hope that it comes across. It is a tricky thing to explain without having a visual aid to it. But
yeah,
but I think that will help a little bit. The other thing that I'm a little concerned about is the idea that she was unable to, you know, recreate these tool markings, which we've all had this just by sheerly manually ejecting around. That's worrisome in the fact that, you know, there's been all these arguments like, well, maybe she wasn't strong enough. Maybe it was this, maybe it was that. And it's like, that shouldn't be a variable there to me. Like, you should be able to do this regardless. Like, and the tool markings should be similar regardless if they're there.
Right. And my thing is, I wish I had like a number to put on it. Like how much, because I'm just basing off of manually cycling guns as opposed to firing guns.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of force firing it is, it's got to be.
Oh, it's significantly more.
Way more. To me, it's like, well, let me try to, you know, I don't know. You've got a box and then the inside of it and you're like, let me see if I bang this with a hammer, if it'll leave a mark. It didn't leave a mark. All right, well, put the hammer in there and then put a stick of dynamite in there and blow it up. Now see if it makes a mark.
Right.
And like, and then it does. And you're like, oh, see, now it's the same mark.
Mm-hmm.
As the original was like, no, that's not the same.
Right.
These are complete. And again, I'm certainly no firearms expert. You are more expert in firearms than me, but neither of us are ballistic, you know, scientists. Right. But what I do know is like the scientific method of doing any kind of testing like this, the whole thing you're trying to do is have a control, right? It's like you're recreating the circumstances as closely as possible. So like immediately on its face, without knowing anything about guns, I'm like, well, if we have a bullet that was manually cycled out of a gun, then the only way you should be testing another bullet is to manually cycle it out of the gun. Like
right.
Doing some, and this is, again, I can't stress this enough. This is not an insignificant difference. I know we have Josh in the chat and you, Zach, you're going to correct me if I'm wrong. But it is not an insignificant difference between manually cycling something and the explosive force of firing a gun.
And not,
those are two very, very different things.
Extremely different. Extremely different. And the tool markings, I mean, so I think the problem is they talk about the tool markings and they have Richard Allen's gun. Well, just because the tool markings are a sufficient agreement to that gun, that extractor that's going to make that is the same piece of metal that's in every single one of those guns.
Exactly.
It's the same shape. It's the same everything. So every possible gun that is that make could be the gun.
Right. And there was a lot of like dancing around with, well, I don't know, it could have been modified and things could have been changed over those 5 years. But there was a lot of shoulda, coulda, maybes in there.
Yeah.
Like what she didn't say is the extractor that was in, and she could have known this. The extractor that was in Richard Allen's gun was not the factory extractor, something like that.
Yeah.
But we didn't get any of that. As far as we know, as far as anyone knows, it is the factory extractor that comes in every single one of the millions of those that are made a year.
Right.
Over how many years, it's all the same thing. And that's why I was so frustrated by the fact that she didn't test even one. I'm not saying you got to test every single one. But for crying out loud, test one other gun.
Right.
Like if you know that his make and model of gun, if you fire it, is capable of making those marks, and you haven't, and the other thing is she didn't note there was anything unique. That's when this type of evidence to me, any kind of firearms ballistics analysis becomes anything useful to me, is there was a defect in the gun. There's something very unique.
Mm-hmm.
This gun makes this mark on bullets because it has this burr in the steel or something. We didn't get any of that here. We're like, all we got is that and the fact that Brad Weber's was inconclusive is just more to my point,
mm-hmm.
in the fact that that's not even the same model. It's the same make, a different model, and it was so close that she couldn't say that it didn't come from that one.
Right.
So, like, what would happen if you used the exact same model with the exact same extractor and the exact same ejector? Like this is, like, anybody leaning on this, I'm sorry, it's just, it's useless. It means absolutely not that this test Now, I get where like Kevin Ani come from, where it's like, yeah, but if you take the totality and put all this together, and you know, he said he did something with a gun and a bullet came out and he said he was there, and then you have this gun that I get putting that together, but by looking at that firearms evidence, that tells me nothing.
Yeah.
All it tells me is that that brand and model of gun might all make that mark.
Yeah, could make those marks.
Yeah.
You know, and that I said it before and you said it in the episode, while I understand parts of it, the idea that there's no photographs is bothersome. You know, where it's yeah. basically we're taking Oberg's word for this, which is they are the professional, they are the expert. But I feel they're, in my opinion as a layman, I want to see some sort of show me your work, show me your proof. You're doing math, show me the math. Let's see this. How does this work? Show me why this is put together.
And thing, I'm going to read, it's one of the last questions, but I'm going to read it because Camilla put in, wasn't a question. She said, just a small note, if you see markings under a microscope and not with the naked eye, she says, just put your phone camera up to the eyepiece and take a photo. It's that easy. It is that easy. And also, those labs have cameras made for, I've seen it in so many trials.
Yeah.
We've all seen it on TV. I've seen them in evidence. Those microscopes are capable of capturing what you're saying you're seeing. So the fact that that was her testimony was like, oh, well, what I saw was in the microscope. The pictures don't really show it. It's like, and I want to be clear too, because there wasn't a question about this, but I thought of a good analogy on my way home today about Brad Weber's gun not being excluded. So think of it like lottery numbers. Like how is one gun able to be excluded? One's able to be included and one's inconclusive. So think about it like this. Like you have a lottery drawing and there's you draw three numbers out. And then everybody looks at their lottery numbers on their tickets. So the Glock and the Smith & Wesson, say the numbers came out and they were 357. And the Glock and Smith & Wesson, one has 368 and the other one has 492, right? Like they have in the spot where those mark, and each one of those is a mark, right? They have a different mark in those locations. That means it definitely did not come from them. With Richard Allen's gun, the lottery numbers are 357. And his lottery ticket says 357. Could have been his. But there could be lots of people that have 357, but we know that he had 357. Brad Weber's, the inconclusive test comes in, and this is where the nuance comes in. His were, it was like if you said it, his lottery ticket said three, the middle number was erased off his paper and seven. Right. So inconclusive means you can't include or exclude. It's because, well, this mark is consistent and this mark's consistent, but I can't see a mark here. So the difference between his and say that Glock is the Glock had a mark there that made a different mark. So I can say not his.
Right.
Whereas an inconclusive came in where he can't include or exclude. It's because there's missing data. There was, they weren't able to make marks deep enough for, let's just say, I don't remember what it was, but let's just say the extractor mark, right? So it's like the ejector mark looks similar, just like Richard Allen's did, but the extractor mark, Brad Weber's gun didn't really make an extractor mark. So I can't say it made a different extractor mark because it just didn't make one. So I can't tell, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that where it's like, it's still a, so if you had that lottery ticket, if you had 3 blank 7, and the winning lottery tickets are 357, you still might have won. That's kind of essentially if that makes sense in my mind. I don't know if it muddies the waters or makes sense to other people's.
I think it makes sense. I like where you're going with this. It's definitely an easier way to explain it. Do we know, and maybe you said this and I missed it, when she tested the Glock and the Smith & Wesson, did she test fire them or did she manually cycle them?
She testified that she test fired and cycled all the guns.
Okay. And which literally it doesn't mean much. I just want to make sure that if she's doing it, she's being consistent across the board. Because if she was able to get these markings by just manually cycling it, that's different.
I believe she was. I don't believe she did 10 times like she did with Richard Allen's.
Right.
Thank you.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Do you want to move into these questions? Because I think that's about all I got that's not going to be covered in these questions.
Yep.
All right. So our first question is from Emmett. You just kind of explained this, but we're going to go through it anyways. I don't understand the conclusion drawn that Rick's gun could not be excluded. Oberg said she tried ejecting the bullet six times, could not replicate the markings on the crime scene bullet unless she made more attempts without firing it and was eventually able to replicate those marks. It sure sounds to me like it excludes Rick's gun. What am I missing?
I agree 100%. Or I think that would fall, like his gun should have fallen into the inconclusive category. Because same thing, right? Because what she testified to was when she just manually cycled the gun, it didn't make marks deep enough to be able to match them up with the crime scene bullet.
Mm-hmm.
She tried it six times and it just didn't do it. It didn't make those marks. To me, so that doesn't say can't be his gun. What that should have said is, you know, I can't say it is his gun. It didn't make a mark that I can say is his, but it didn't. So, and this is where all that nuance comes in, right? So she mentions later that I don't know what's, you know, how many times he's fired it, any modifications, what's been done to the gun over 5 years. So like, that's where that type of ambiguity kind of comes in, would be like, it didn't make the marks. That doesn't mean it wasn't his gun, but it just means that I don't have enough evidence to say that it was his gun. To me, that's where it should have ended, right? Mm-hmm. There. Then, you know, again, firing it and creating this explosive force, and then it made the deeper marks. And then once it made the deeper marks, she could say, yeah, it made basically the same marks that are on that bullet. That's irrelevant to me because you had to fire it to do it, and that bullet wasn't fired.
Right.
And she used that excuse in the opposite with that. It was like, well, yeah, I had to fire it, but I mean, he could have, maybe he modified it over 5 years. Maybe he shot it so many times it got wore out. It's like, it doesn't work that way. It works the other way, but mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. You don't say, I know it's his, even though I had to do something different with it because maybe he did something else to it.
Right. And let's jump on something you said there, because listener Josh in the comments said something about asking how many rounds would a lifespan of a gun be for a pistol like that. And it's an extraordinary amount. You would have to shoot. I did a little research, quick research, but just in my knowledge and what I pulled up quickly, you're shooting 15,000, 20,000 rounds through that gun before it starts to lose accuracy, before you start needing to changing parts, unless something breaks, right? But just out of sheer normal habit, there's not an average person that's doing that. As a sports shooter myself, I have maybe shot 20,000 rounds out of my competition pistol and still have not worn through it. But that I was shooting heavily, heavily, heavily. As someone that just...
And that's a lot.
That is a lot. But as someone that's just carrying a firearm as a as a concealed carry or even a target gun, no one is shooting that much. Like, it really takes a lot to change those.
There's a cost involved with that too, besides the time.
Right.
Bullets aren't free. Like, someone shooting 15,000-20,000 rounds through a gun has money, or a sponsor like you did.
Yeah, I had a sponsor. Right. I did not have the money to do that, but I had a sponsor. But yeah, it's just a normal person's not doing that. And then at that point, there's so many people, a lay person typically, if a gun starts acting funny, they're probably going to take it to a gunsmith. They're going to have things done. But a lot of times on a gun like that, they might just buy a new gun.
Right.
Instead of putting a bunch of effort into pieces they don't understand, if it's that, you know what I mean?
Well, and if we're talking about like Richard Allen's case, like her saying maybe he modified it, you would assume like most, like there's things I could change on a gun, parts I could change. If I need extractors and ejectors and stuff like that change, I'm taking it to a gunsmith, which means there's records of that.
Right.
And if those existed, the state would have found it. Right. Those are like gunsmith professional shooter things. Like your average person who carries, like I am very familiar with firearms. I've grown up around them. I have them. I carry. I wouldn't even attempt to tear a gun apart and replace an extractor.
Yeah.
That's just not a thing that I would do. I hate any time people throw out, it's like, well, this maybe happened because this could have happened. It's like that. No, you're the state. Your job is to prove what did happen, not hypothesize about what might have happened.
Mm-hmm. And that's when I said, I said math, it's science, but I mean the same thing. I mean, you can't just tell me I need to know that 1 + 1 = 2. You don't throw in all these other variables that don't make sense. Like, you need to tell me the facts and straight the facts.
Yeah, and Audio Man in our chat, like, he put it as clear-cut as you could possibly put it, and I agree with you 100%. So when she had a round from the crime scene, she took the same round, same type of round, like same manufactured round, and cycled it through Richard Allen's gun, and it didn't make those same marks on it when you did the same thing that was done to that round. As Audio Man in chat says, the round found at the crime scene was ejected from a gun that makes deeper marks when racked. Yeah, that's the conclusion you should come to.
Mm-hmm.
This gun doesn't make that deep of, you know, and that could be because the one found the crime scene was, or the crime scene was brand new, or it was old. I don't know, but there's no evidence that it was Richard Allen's.
Right. Moving on. Daniel has two questions. First question, so much of the approach toward testing the bullet seems unscientific to me. If they repeatedly tried to get tool marks by ejecting the bullet and were unable to do so from RA's gun, how does that not more exclude him than include him in his gun, given the state's theory of how that round got on the crime scene? I understand that gun may have been changed over time, so that is one time that it might have been able to produce those marks without firing it. But if the gun repeatedly failed to produce those tool marks when the bullet was ejected without firing it, doesn't that suggest that gun, at least in that point of time, was not capable of producing those tool marks when simply ejected?
Well, Danielle, you just hit right on the nose everything I just said, so we'll skip down to the next one.
I know.
I was going to say.
As I was reading it, I'm like, I think we just said all of this.
Yeah, yeah. All right. But I agree 100%, Danielle.
All right, her second question. I also really don't understand why the tool marks weren't compared to other guns of the same make and model. At least if the goal was to determine whether RA's gun likely ejected that bullet rather than produce good evidence for the prosecution. I'm guessing RA's Sig Sauer wasn't the only one of its kind in existence. Even accepting the weird way that they matched the tool marks, knowing whether they had sufficient agreement with specifically RA's gun or with that model more generally seems more important than finding out the facts.
Yeah, I agree. I think they were... And I think somebody else asked this question later, but yeah, I think they were just afraid of bad evidence. They didn't want to go compare to, because this is what I suspect this is my hypothesis, but it's based on the trial testimony and how everything was presented, how the testing was done, and the fact that she didn't say there was anything unique, the fact that Brad Weber's gun couldn't be excluded either, that it was making similar marks, but not enough of them to be include or exclude. This is my hypothesis. Those marks were so generic that any gun of that make and model, probably any Sig Sauer 40 caliber, they probably all use the same ejector, probably all would have made the exact same marks. And if they had gone and tested a bunch more of them, this was the problem. let's say it is Richard Allen's gum. Let's say as it turns, because I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying this testing doesn't prove it. That's what I'm saying. Let's just assume it is. That mark was made from Richard Allen's gun. When he ejected it back at the time of the crime, his gun was new. It only had a few rounds fired through it. All the springs were tighter and everything, so it made the marks deeper. He ejected the round and it made the marks. 5 years later, they're testing his gun. He's shot it a whole bunch of times. The springs are looser. It doesn't make the marks as well. And then they go do what they should have done, which is go grab five other guns of the same make and model. One, if not all of them, let's say another one that's brand new, they test it and it makes the marks identical. First try. Now if you're the state, you're in a real pickle.
Yeah.
Because now you have evidence that a different gun made those marks. A gun maybe that you got from a gun shop that no one's ever owned. That would be ideal, is if it came from a gun. But if it was like from somebody that else lived in Delphi where you had it, then you got something. But it still screws you over with your Richard Allen case. So I get why they did, but to me, that's why. I'm sure they did not direct Oberg to go test a bunch of other guns of that same make and model. Because if even one of them made those same marks, they were screwed.
Right.
So they had enough to say it was Richard Allen's, and they stopped right there.
And I know we've harped on this. I really, the term sufficient agreement is one that you know, it sounds good to like anybody listening. Like, it's sufficient agreement. It is the same. But that doesn't mean it's the same. Like, and that is worrisome to me.
It shouldn't be allowed for me. Like, again, I know I'm very defense minded, but I'm like, it shouldn't be allowed. The state's job is to prove their case with real evidence. This is not real evidence. Like, to me, none of this should have even been allowed to be put in front of the jury unless there was much more testing. Like, this is a perfect example of cherry picking just the exact amount of evidence that helps make your case look stronger than it actually is. Because they only tested his 6 hour of that model, was a 239, was that his?
I think that, yeah.
Because they only tested his, and his maybe probably could have made that mark if it was, or it did make the mark when it was fired, then they're able to go to trial and say that was his gun.
Mm-hmm.
Where if they had, the fact that there's so much gray area here, to me, it shouldn't have been allowed at all.
Jess says 226.
226. Was it one of them? Was it, maybe it was Weber's? Was it 239? Or maybe I just pulled that number out of my ass. Who knows?
No, all the SIGs are numbered like that. And there's a lot of times that these components, especially the smaller components like an extractor, would be similar across the same maker. You know, even though the models are different, yeah, the little pieces like that, components, the springs, things like that, are the same pieces across, you know, an entire maker, like Glock, for instance. I guarantee almost every caliber Glock would make basically the same markings for the extractor, because all the extractors are going to be, maybe they're a tiny bit bigger, tiny bit smaller, but the actual markings are going to be pretty much exactly the same.
But if you take all the 40 caliber Glocks, all the different versions of that, which there are several,
right,
I bet they all have the exact same extractor.
Right, they do. Yeah, for sure, yeah, they do.
That makes the exact same mark, unless there's something unique about it, which, again, there was nothing unique about Richard Allen's gun,
mm-hmm,
according to her testimony. Nothing unique about it at all. Like, I want you to understand that. Like, that mark was made by a piece that is used in every single 40 caliber 6 hour gun.
Right.
And there was nothing unique about it.
Josh has a couple questions here. His first question is it possible that the Glock and the Smith & Wesson M&P were compared to the crime scene round due to it being standard issue police sidearms, just possibly ruling out an officer might have dropped a round?
Good question. I don't know. I just assumed that it was my initial thought when I read that question was no. I'm sure they weren't looking to see if a cop did it, but if it was just to see if maybe a cop dropped a round, possible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. My assumption has always been that it was a suspect's gun, but that's possible, very possible.
Second question is, if I understand correctly, there was no confirmation that the three other marks on the round were even came from the same gun.
It's real wishy-washy in the testimony. So what he's talking about, and if I didn't make, just to reiterate, the round that was found at the crime scene, my understanding of it was that there was ejector extractor, whatever that third mark was, repeated three times on the round.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning it had been, she didn't say that they were, that it made different marks every time, like they came from three different guns. My understanding, Josh, was that they all were the same, just in different positions, because, you know, the gun had been ejected from the round, put back in, ejected again, put back in, ejected again.
Okay. Third question is, if they found a similar Winchester round in RA's gun when they acquired it, why didn't they just compare that round to the crime scene round, especially if the same manufacturer and case type? I'm not sure, but I would suspect nickel-plated and brass cases have slightly different hardnesses and would produce different results, especially under the microscopic level.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know if it was, maybe it wasn't exactly the same, or maybe because it was, you know, dinged up from being in the gun for a long time and they wanted to get, you know, have a clean. That's like normal, like scientific method control stuff that you do, right? It's like, okay, let's start with a brand new clean round that doesn't have any other marks on it and see if it makes the marks. Like I'm actually fine with that. It would have been interesting though, since if that top round, now I got to go back and remember, because I remember there was one Winchester round in the gun and then most of them were like blazer, like target ammo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that round was like the one in the chamber or if it was just in a magazine and had never been in the chamber. I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. And do we know, so I know the crime scene round was a nickel plated round. And the ones she tested were nickel plated as well?
I believe so. I believe they were identical rounds.
Okay. Because that, as Josh brought up, the hardness level could determine that as yeah. well. So that's an interesting theory I haven't thought about.
The round is nickel plated or the casing?
The casing.
Casing.
I apologize if I said I meant the casing, but
yeah. Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Laura has two questions. If I heard correctly, the testimony was that the unspent round had been cycled through the gun at least three times. Is there any record of how many times the firearms expert tried cycling the same unspent round?
As far as I know, one time.
Laura's second question is whether the brand of ammunition makes a difference in these things. This is a true curiosity thing. As someone from the Midwest, but without as much specific knowledge of the guns, is the ammo so standardized that it shouldn't matter what brand, or could that potentially impact what's visible and what's not?
That's a good you question. I would say it will definitely make a difference. But
it would definitely make a difference. I mean, they use similar components, but everything is going to, as Josh stated in the last question, there's going to be hardness differences, even between different types of brass. You know what I mean? Brass is brass, but it's how much it's been compressed. Some rounds use new brass, some use recycled brass. It's all going to depend on those little manufacturers, yeah, those little things. So
thickness and hardness and all that stuff is going to be different between, like, right. I said, like when they said Blazer, and maybe Blazer makes home defense rounds that I'm unaware of, but like when I heard Blazer, I'm like, oh, those are the cheap rounds you buy,
yeah,
for target shooting, and because they're cheaper, like the wall of the brass is thinner, like everything's cheaper made, it's not as hard, you know, they tend to jam more, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Aaron says, did the defense put on their own firearms expert? Seems like they really missed the opportunity if they didn't.
I meant to look this up. They had an expert. I think there was something like the judge wouldn't allow him to testify or what. But I feel like I remember reading that. But also I remember them reading that the defense expert didn't re-examine the bullets. He just looked over her work and her photos or something like that. I apologize, Aaron. I'll circle back to this last week because I meant to get you a solid answer on that. I have not read that testimony. I've read about that testimony about the or at least about the defense's firearms expert's report. I don't know if they testified or not, but I'll have to get back to that, Aaron. I apologize. I saw the question. I meant to look it up and I got lost in something else.
All right. Leah says, was Richard Allen's gun tested at the time he originally came forward shortly after the murders, or was it tested several years later when he was arrested?
Several years later. Well, it was before he was arrested. It was 5 years later, they got the search warrant for his house. And my understanding is they got that search warrant because someone found the report from the DNR officer about him being questioned that had been like misplaced is what they claimed.
Mm-hmm.
And that put him back on their radar as a suspect, and they got a search warrant, and that's where they got the gun. And then they ran the testing. And it's because you see in his interrogation is when they're telling him that they've done the testing in the firearms, and he hadn't been arrested yet at that point, but it was not back in 2017. It was 5 years later.
Yeah. And it was, like, I, as you do say this, I remember this because it was in the PCA as part of the arrest warrant was that they had tested the gun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of moving on from the firearms stuff. We had a couple extra questions here. Kathy says, why do you think they didn't spend the money on the height analysis? Could it be that they were afraid that it would be bad evidence if they showed that BG wasn't 5'4"?
I don't know. And Janet was planning to be here at a bunch of notes. She sent us some stuff beforehand, and she had some stuff to say about the photogrammetry. One thing she pointed out is that, you know, smaller towns, like there are budget concerns. You know, it's not like, you know, it's the FBI and they have this, you know, spending $10,000 on some analysis, no big deal. Although the FBI was involved in this. I don't know the answer to that. And Janet also brought up concerns about, you know, what are we accepting for, you know, what should we be willing to accept for evidence, and what's junk science, kind of like we just, you know, case in point, the firearms evidence that we've just been talking about. I don't know, because I, to say that they didn't do a height analysis because they didn't want bad evidence would imply that they already knew who the suspect was. Because remember, you had 5 years of investigation
mm-hmm.
before they got to Richard Allen. So I don't know. I mean, I get, you know, $10,000 for a small department is a lot of money to spend to have an expert come in and do it. Maybe it wasn't possible. Maybe he says that they were also worried about inaccuracies. I don't know. I mean, I've seen photogrammetry work, and when it's done right, you know, we in the George Powell case, we went over it, and I've always thought that this case would have been a perfect example of how you have him walking across a bridge with you know, railroad ties, where you have a known length. Like it's a, like you could go to that spot, you could measure the height of that tree that's behind him. You could measure the exact spot where his foot is. You could measure the exact length of the railroad ties. You could measure the exact distance from where the photo was or the video was taken from. You could, you know, you could stand. It seems to me that you could have done it and got an accurate, at least range. So I don't know the answer to that, because like, yeah, we're inclined to say like, oh, well, they knew that Richard Allen was 5'4", so they didn't want to risk it. But that's the decision to not do the photogrammetry work was made over the 5 years before Richard Allen was even, they even know who he was.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. My suspicion is, I think it's probably one of two things. Either it's exactly what they said, which is it was $10,000. They couldn't really afford it, and they checked into it and didn't think they would get an accurate number from it. So they didn't do it. And they're being straight up about that. Or they did it and didn't disclose it. To me, it's got to be one of those two things. I don't think it's the, we don't want bad evidence against Richard Allen, because again, it's something that they, when they were desperately trying to find who did this, they should have done it a long time before they ever got to Richard Allen.
Right.
So yeah, I wouldn't, and I don't want to accuse anybody of that, and I'm not accusing them of it, but like the only two possible explanations to me are either the reason they gave for it is the reason they didn't do it. And you can chalk that up either to just incompetence and bad investigative work, or you could chalk that up to, you know, they just literally just couldn't afford it and didn't think they'd get an accurate result. Or they did one, and then after they found Richard Allen, you know, as I mentioned in the episode, that height range we got, we don't know where that height range came from. Whatever they said, 5'6" to 5'10" or whatever that range was. You know, it was, I had always assumed that came from photogrammetry work. They're saying that it's not, but it's never disclosed where that came from. And it was in the FBI and the law enforcement in the posters, but that could have just as easily just come from one of the eyewitnesses.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I don't know why they didn't do it.
And our last question, I know you have, I'm going to say our last question. It's our last listener question, because I know JV sent you a few things that you want to tackle a little bit. So our last listener question is from Jennifer. Is there any evidence presented at trial to support Anya's statement of, it all adds up to this guy who we know to be a total creep, you know, before this, at the end? And she made another comment around 1630 about this, but I don't recall the reports or character evidence for Allen before 2017. While in Westville, he apologized for some incidents that alleged victims denied happening in his history of mental illness, but that's all I can remember ever coming out.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and she was quoting there earlier, like directly from the episode that Anya had said, it all adds up to the guy we know to be a total creep, you know, before this. I don't know. I don't recall. I was kind of taken aback when she said that too. So I don't know. Like, I've heard all kinds of stuff about like Ron Logan and his criminal history, and you know, his exes saying that, you know, he was being flirtatious or something with young girls, having an issue there. I don't recall ever hearing that about Richard Allen. Zach, you were more into this case before the trial than me. Do you ever remember hearing anything about him being a creep?
I don't remember. And the only things I can ever remember hearing about Richard Allen when it first came out that maybe could be construed as that is that he worked at the local CVS. And there was a rumor maybe that he had developed photos for the family for free for the funeral, or, you know, there was something like that. And then people said, well, he was trying to feel bad about it, or there was.
Is that what she's talking about here, about him apologizing for something and then the victim saying it didn't happen?
I don't know. I don't know if that's it or not, but I do remember that was a rumor that came around, but I don't remember anything other than that. And I don't think that adds up to him one way or the other being a creep if he gave them free photos for the funeral.
Yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Jennifer. I have never come across anything. I was in the moment during the interview was taken aback by them saying that to me. It just felt like, I don't know. So, somebody in the chat says she found him to be manipulative based on the way he spoke to his wife. Yeah, that may be, but I still don't think that justifies, you know, he was known to be a creep before this.
Right.
Like that, I don't know, that's a pretty bold statement without, and I'm not saying there isn't anything to back it up. I've never seen anything to back that up. And with that said, I think Janet did send us a bunch of stuff. The one big thing I wanted to touch on was the photogrammetry stuff, which I hit on.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to sit here live reading through this long thing that she sent. So she should be back hopefully next week. And if she wants to touch on any of those things, we can touch on them then. As far as that, though, that wraps us up for today. Everything from, did we have anybody? I don't think anybody. A few people in the chat did ask, or in our post did ask, and I just, because we talked about all this last week, the that be a gun that we go down conversation. A lot of people, yeah. there were two or three people that asked, like, could she have said Abby a gun? Mm-hmm. But we'd already had that conversation. Yeah. You asked about that.
Yeah.
And no, it's definitely not that. The problem is she very clearly says that. Like, there's no getting around. She says that. It's not Abby. Mm-hmm. There's a space between that and B. And so that's why it kind of became, well, if she says gun at the end, then the only thing she could say is that be a gun.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, again, obviously not an audio expert and no one's ever came across this, but even if you listen to the context of what she's saying in the sentence, that we go down fits the context of what she's saying. Like that be a gun would be a total different thought to what she says before it and what she says after it.
Yeah. Well, and that was, you know, the argument there is that she was startled by the gun. That's why she said it. But that we go down, which is what I hear mm-hmm. when I listen to it. You know, she says, oh, see, there's no path. There's no path up here. So this is the path that we go down is what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, she says, and this is the path that be a gun. Like it doesn't fit with anything, which I can see people making the argument that, well, it doesn't fit because she just got shocked by a gun. But then who says that be a gun?
Right.
In the biggest, silliest argument for that to me is the people that are like, well, that's just how kids talk these days. She's trying to be cool. And call, that's like, no one's ever said that ever.
Yeah.
No one's ever said that be a gun.
Like, right.
That's not she would be the first if that's what she said, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, there was that piece, and there was, I feel like I must have missed it when I was throwing the outline together, but, or maybe it was something that Janet said, but regarding the voice analysis, you know, again, with that, there's one expert, a couple things. One, you have an officer on the stand saying, I listened to all these hours of phone calls, and I listened to that tape, or I listened to that recording that says, you know, guys down the hill, and I know that is definitely his voice. So that's two things. One, he is not an expert. He's just a guy. And people are like, well, he's a law enforcement officer. It's like, so what? It doesn't, like, I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. I didn't take a voice analysis class. Neither did he.
Right.
It doesn't make you a superhuman because you're law enforcement. So, but he's just a guy that said it. But then the part that I thought was more interesting was when whoever it was that testified that there were up to hundreds of tips that came in where people said, I heard that recording and I'm 100% certain that is this person, not Richard.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that they were right. Obviously, they can't all be right. There's so many of them. The point is, like, it's not scientific at all. Like, anybody could hear that. It just, even if you're one of the people that are like, oh, I hear it and I'm sure that's Richard Allen. Yeah. There was also people that heard it and were sure it was Billy Bob. Like, you're not different than any of those other people. And then when we had the expert audiologist or whatever, the person who came on and gave the expert testimony, you know, they said the only thing that they could testify to by actually doing a real analysis was that the voice said down the hill,
mm-hmm.
you know, that he heard him. I think he said he heard him say guys. He could say for sure that he said guys. And then one of the girls responds and then he says down the hill. Like, it's impact. It should be meaningful that he couldn't say, after analyzing it as a professional, an expert, that she said that be a gun. And he couldn't say that was Richard Allen's voice. And again, I'm not saying that to say that so it wasn't. What I'm saying is, it's fine for anybody to have an opinion one way or the other on that. I'm not arguing with anybody over their opinions. What I'm saying is you just have to remember it is an opinion.
Right.
That's all it is. It's just an opinion. It's not an evidence. It's not a fact.
So going back to the that be a gun thing really quick, as I'm just literally sitting here thinking in real time, I know that there is like there's both sides kind of going back and forth to what she says, but why does it matter? Because whoever that gentleman is, whoever bridge right. guy is that's in that video is the person that killed them. And we hear that person say down the hill, whatever she says in that moment does not flip to a person. You know what I mean? Like if it's like, oh, that be a gun, that must be Richard Allen. But if she says the path that we go down, that can't be Richard Allen. There's no argument either way.
Here's where the argument comes in. The reason we never heard, I mean, most people never heard the audio before this. It was because Walla testified that he confessed to her and in his confession while they were up on the bridge before they went down, that's where she said, and I did something to the gun and a bullet came out. So once that information was out there, then all of a sudden it became critically important that she said that be a gun and I heard a gun racking. Because now it's corroborating what Richard Allen's supposed confession says.
Okay.
So I think that like that's why it fits together. If there was nothing in that confession that said he had a gun out at that point or that he racked a bullet at that point, I don't think we'd even be having this argument.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious as to where that argument leads. Because either way, that guy is the guy and that's not his voice.
Right. Well, it's just like I said with all the witness testimony, like everything I've covered so far, and I've gone so much deeper into this case than I had ever planned on doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like nothing to me is, and it goes right back to why I've never said Richard Allen's innocent, but why I'm like, I have reasonable doubt. I can't say that he's guilty because everything that Kevin and Anya told me, everything I've read in the transcript has been all prosecution witnesses. I'm really looking at all the state's case against. I'm just like, this is not strong.
Mm-hmm.
Even the witnesses, it's like, you know, people are arguing about how did the, you know, where did the drawing come from and who said that and this and that. It's like, still not like none of it, you know, they were like, you know, Betsy Blair was manipulated by this or that, or like they didn't draw a picture of Richard Allen.
Yeah.
Nobody described Richard Allen. Like none of that describes her. Does it mean it couldn't have been him? No. But the point is the evidence that came out is not positive evidence that Richard Allen did it. None of it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally none of it. The only things that actually indicate him are the confessions, which we're going to cover in 2 weeks or next week. And then again, to me, of all of it, the thing that's most bothersome to me is Betsy Blair, who we know was at the bridge right before the girls were at the bridge, saw a man standing on the first platform, turned around, passed Abby, and like she saw bridge guy for sure. I shouldn't say for sure. As far as I'm concerned, for sure. And Richard Allen said of his own free will that at some point that afternoon he was standing on that platform. Of all that, that is the strongest evidence. And that to me, that's not enough to convict somebody.
Right.
But of everything so far, that's the only thing that is compelling to me. When you put those two pieces, like Betsy Blair's statement doesn't mean shit to me, and neither does Richard Allen's. It's when you put the two together that I'm like, okay, I could see you might have something there.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, I think this was a helpful episode for me, at least, and I hope it was for everybody else.
Yeah, I'm glad if I could only have one of you this week, I'm glad it was you with all the firearm stuff. So hopefully one of these weeks we'll get all three. I said in our Patreon pregame this week, this is the 2/3 show because everybody's so crazy busy, we can't get all three of us in the room all at the same time.
We'll get us there.
Hopefully one of these weeks coming up. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. Make sure you tune in on Sunday for about, it's me and Mata, so our sure was going to be 30-minute conversations, about an hour and 15 minutes, talking all about the Lindsey Clancy case. And then we'll talk about that in next week's follow-up. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. Co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design.
Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.